owners of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Hey, welcome to the Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Truth is our bitch. Very happy to be with you tonight. Very sad to hear the news of the passing of Jonathan Winters, who was a obvious founding father of modern comedy, one of three that I consider to be the founding fathers of modern comedy, Lenny Bruce being one, Richard Pryor being another, and Jonathan Winters being the third. I think those are the three fathers of what we call today observational ethnic humor, you know, honest humor. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, you know, just completely insane humor. And Jonathan Winters was, as an improviser, as an improvisational artist, he was probably the best that there's ever been. I mean, just standing on stage by himself. So I got the news today, and it's one of those things where something is super personal to you. For me, Jonathan Winters was, as I've listed my influences, I've never mentioned Jonathan Winters because I found him later on by way of a couple of friends. I was mostly influenced by, as I've mentioned a lot of times, Jackie Gleason was a big influence. Later on was Frank Zappa, Firesign Theater, Laurel and Hardy. Jonathan Winters was a guy that was almost like the cherry on top of the whipped cream. You know, he was like the final garnish of what was a pretty amazing era in comedy. And stand-up comics were leaving the one-liners behind, and they were leaving behind the era of doing just impressions for impressions' sakes, and leaving behind the era of the Henny Youngman stuff, and they were moving into a kind of a dangerous place where they were standing on stage doing a nightclub act, but they were making comments about the world around them in ever more relevant ways. And Lenny Bruce was one, and there are so many others. Mort Saul. Jonathan Winters didn't do any of that, but he sure referenced movies that he'd seen, and he was modern in a different way. He wasn't modern so much, it wasn't so much modern in the material so much as he was modern in his approach, in his execution, in what he did, which was to modernize certain kinds of stereotypical images, like that Maud Frickett character of his. A little old lady was taken by Jonathan Winters, and he didn't mock her being old. He turned her into almost a degenerate. Not a real degenerate, but, you know. So anyway, I don't want to do a big speech here.
Yeah, just let people go listen to Jonathan Winters.
The what?
You should just recommend that people listen to Jonathan Winters, and you can move on.
Well, is it all right if I... God!
No, why can't Phil talk about it?
Well, Phil can talk about it, but I'm worried that you're going to begin to... You're going to say what you said during the... Well...
Yeah, you're going to start talking about how, hey, there's a lot of similarities between me and him.
Wait a minute. I never said anything of the sort.
Well... No, Phil, what you did say was that Jonathan Winters, a lot of the same things have been said about you that were said about him.
No, hold on for a minute.
Yeah, well, oh, he's a genius.
No, I didn't say that. No, that's not, I did not, what I said was, there's only one part of all that early reporting today on Jonathan Winters that I recognized, and that was the following. When they said, we didn't know what to do with him, they didn't know what to do with him. Where do you put Jonathan Winters? He's not a movie star necessarily, he's not a TV star necessarily, he's not a recording artist necessarily. What do you do with him? He's a great guest, but he's not a great host. It was difficult, okay? And I'm just saying, I've heard that before said about what I do.
Well,
yeah, you sort of wanted to say you were a genius.
No, I did not. I'm gonna, you know what, you guys, you wonder what causes problems around here. You guys do.
Oh, I see. We're the cause of the problems, not you. We are.
Yeah, when you guys misinterpret stuff like that.
Biden, who files talking with Phil today? He didn't say nothing about genius.
Well, just so you know, you're not a genius. You're not Jonathan Winters.
Who said that I was? I don't say I'm Jonathan Winters. Never in my life would I ever think I'm Jonathan Winters. Look at the amazing story of that man. Look at the great success he's had. So,
And the fact that you lived near where he lived...
Yeah, that's not anything. What, do you think you're going to get credit for that?
What are you talking about? I never want to take credit for living near where he... I don't even live near where he lives. I live 20 miles away, 30 miles away.
Well, you're closer than a lot of people, and I don't think you should get credit for that.
Why would I get credit for that? Can you imagine that? By the way, I live near 20 miles from Jonathan Winters. Oh, Jesus. Can we interview you, Mr. Hendry?
Well, you think that that's what's going to happen?
No. That's about the dumbest thing I think I've ever heard said, okay?
Well, then don't think it.
I don't think it. I haven't thought it. You guys said it, though.
Well, we're only saying it because we think that that's what you would think.
We said it because you thunk it. I mean, you didn't. Never mind.
Oh, here we go with the never mind. You always say never mind when you butcher something up.
What are you talking about?
Every time you go like right then, you went, we thunk it, oh wait, we think it, oh never mind.
What?
Hey, bud, what is it with you today? Are you Margaret's best friend today? Is that what's going on? Yesterday you were antagonizing her all over the place. Day before, you're my buddy. What are you sucking up to her for?
I'm not sucking up. Other than the fact, well, I got a job.
What job did he get?
He's driving me to the studio every night.
That's fantastic.
What's so funny about that?
No, it's nothing. I understand now. Of course you gotta echo everything she says.
I'm my own man. I go my own way and plot my own course in life.
Yeah, sure.
And, well...
Yeah, of course you do. And by the way, you're Ms. Gray's driver. Are you kidding me? Why do you need a driver?
Because it's tiring coming all the way up here, Phil. Because I have other things I have to do. I'm doing a lot of reading. I'm on the phone. I need someone to drive me. It's not unusual.
I understand that, but I just... All right, well, that's good. And I hope... well, don't tell me what she's paying you, because I don't want to know.
Well, I'm going to get $2 an hour.
What?
You're kidding.
What?
You're paying him $2 an hour.
That's good.
He's happy with it.
What?
That you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Give him more money than that.
What? Can she afford more?
Bud, we'll talk about it later on. Thanks a lot. How dare you interfere in my business matters?
$2 an hour. Come on. Jonathan Winters passed on today. He was 87 years of age. He was born in 1925 in Dayton, Ohio. Mr. Winters went on to a brief stint with the United States Marines in World War II. I say brief. It was long enough. He was a gunner on an aircraft carrier, the Bonhomie Richard, an aircraft carrier that later was commanded by Admiral Stephen Morrison, the father of Jim Morrison of the Doors. So that's a ship. And we're talking about the World War II version of the Bonhomie Richard, a ship that had a rather distinguished crew from time to time, although... In one instance, much before Jonathan Winters' great career in comedy began, and the other, the father of a young man who went on to become the lead singer of The Doors, Jim Morrison. Jonathan Winters, as I was saying to Dan before the show started, I saw him interviewed, and I believe it was part of the Screen Actors Guild series. You can look these interviews up, folks, online. They've got tons and tons of interviews of the great stars and actors and comics and people who've made their living from time to time in movies, and they're really interesting because they're sitting there and they are talking about their craft in a way that you're never going to hear them do on a talk show. And they have a lot of time to expand on the topic. They have time to discuss how they got into it and so on. And Jonathan Winters, in one of the rare interviews that I've seen of him where he's not doing any kind of shtick at all, he's talking very seriously. And he said that being on an aircraft carrier was like being on a floating gas station because you have nothing but gasoline and explosives on board an aircraft carrier. And that was the biggest sweat for a young man named Jonathan Winters during World War II, was being on an aircraft carrier, knowing that, the wrong day, any bomb that was dropped by a Japanese plane that found the right target on the wrong day, and that was the end of the ship. So he talked a lot about that, and then getting into comedy, he was part of a talent contest. And he wanted to win the talent contest because he wanted to win the first prize, which was a watch. He needed a watch, he said. And he won the talent contest, so his wife encouraged him to continue to explore the world of comedy and doing these things. He also got a job, I think, briefly at a radio station in Dayton, Ohio. He came west, continued to expand his career on stage, and one night in 1959 at the Hungry Eye in San Francisco, I don't even know if the Hungry Eye is still there or not. Margaret, do you?
I don't know. I think it's been started and restarted a couple of times, but it's in North Beach.
Yeah, the Hungry Eye in San Francisco, he had some kind of a nervous breakdown that I heard about as a kid. At odd times, and it always had some different, he climbed a flagpole, he refused to come out of a bathroom. I don't know what happened, but he was eventually hospitalized, And it turned out that he was what they called in those days manic depressive. Today we call it bipolar. And I can imagine a guy having a breakdown. If you're bipolar, you're going from these heights and these moods of great elation all the way to the rock bottom pits of depression. That's probably something that will cause anybody to just momentarily lose it. Anyway, he was hospitalized. He gets out of the hospital, and very shortly thereafter, he gets a call from Stanley Kramer offering him a part in a movie called It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. And he didn't want to take it. And his wife said to him, if you don't take this part, you will never work again in the entertainment business. You have to take this part. And he did. And if you've seen the movie, he plays this mechanic who winds up destroying an entire gas station, and he's hysterically funny. The movie I liked him in more was a movie called The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, where he plays like a sheriff, or he's some deputy sheriff out on Long Island when the Russians, by mistake, run a submarine aground. Anyway, Jonathan Winters, and he's gone now. And, you know, I mean, that's life. And like I was saying, you know, it's funny how you don't think of people as being old because you don't want them to go. And I think that was the case with Jonathan Winters. For me, it was just, I always knew that he was, as long as he's alive, you know, I don't care if he's not doing anything. I just like the fact that I know that he's alive. And when he passed on, it was definitely the passing of a genius and the passing of an era in comedy that every single person who does comedy today, every single human being, man or woman, that does humor today owes a debt of gratitude to Jonathan Winters. I don't care who they are. I don't care what they think they do. They owe a debt to Jonathan Winters.
What about you?
No, I don't. I'm the only one. I'm kidding. Of course I do.
Well, yes, absolutely you do. And I think that you owe a larger debt to Jonathan Winters because you don't really mention him as an influence, and I think you're lying.
You know what, Margaret? I mean, that's about as cruel.
I'm joking.
Yeah, she's being Jonathan Winters.
Oh, ha, 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 ha.
Well, that was a real sarcastic ha, ha, ha. I'm joking.
In any event, Godspeed, God bless you, rest in peace, Jonathan Winters. We're going to come back with all kinds of news here tonight on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. A North Korean spy says Kim Jong-un is struggling to control the military. Kid Rock is embarrassed to be a Republican. How about them apples? And Matt Damon is selling his $20 million mansion in Miami. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
About it.
The Phil
I'm
Hendry
give
Show.
Give it a rest.
Bill Hendry Show.
Doug, look it up.
I'm looking it up, okay? Take it easy, man. Hey, guys, welcome back to World Famous Phil Hendry Show. So I decided I would go on what's this called?
It's iTunes.
iTunes, and look up Jonathan Winters to see what they're carrying in terms of comedy. Now, so far, you know, I have not completed my search. I am on their comedy, in their comedy section. I've even found my way to something called 60s and 70s comedy, which I would imagine I would find Jonathan Winters in, because I'm looking at 20th Century Masters Bill Cosby. But right now, man, I ain't seeing no Winters. Let me see. Let's see if I find it.
Well, you would think there'd be Jonathan Winters.
You would think. But I got news for you. Why are you not refreshing here, iTunes? I'm just going to tell you something, iTunes. You're featuring here on your feature page, and this is just for your edification, but it shows the glaring weakness, and I think it shows your inability in the truest sense to connect to culture, because while you guys may be all about technology, and I, you know, think it's fantastic, Apple, all that great stuff, when it comes to actually knowing what's going on in the world, on a day when Jonathan Winters dies, you would think you'd be featuring, because I'm looking at Lily Tomlin, I'm looking at Bill Cosby, I'm looking at George Carlin, I'm looking at Steve Martin, I'm looking at Red Fox. You know, I mean, I said Red Fox, and he's funny, but where's Jonathan Winters? The guy died today.
Well, I don't think you can expect them. What are you...
I'm expecting them to be featuring, if they're going to put albums, which is what they're doing here on this particular page, Monty Python, In Living Color, no Jonathan Winters. All right, because at some point in the show, I want to play a little. I want to do something. You know, I don't, I want to do something, even if it has nothing to do with Jonathan Winters. I want to do something. All right.
What are you talking about?
I'm just screwing around. Take it easy. Anyway, welcome back to the program. A former North Korean spy who bombed a South Korean airliner said on Wednesday that the North's leader, Kim Jong-un, is struggling to control his military and using war talk to shore up support. That's what I thought he was doing.
No, you didn't. You said that.
Yes, I did. I told you.
Yeah, you said so in the beginning of the show, but you didn't say it. I mean, you said it. You said it on the pre-show. You didn't say it on the show.
I said it on the pre-show. I said, yeah, I thought this guy was talking tough so he could, to the military would start loving him. We got to get General Galen Shaw in here, man, to talk about this, because this is a military thing, and that's the only guy that I know. He's the only guy that's been on this show that has any military chops other than Lloyd Bonafide, and that guy is half out of his mind. A former North Korean spy who bombed a South Korean airliner. Was that the same one that... No, that was an American airliner that got blown up.
That was the one they shot out of the sky. That was terribly tragic. Terribly tragic.
What, do you think it was tragic, or you just...
Why wouldn't I think it's tragic?
Because you're going... Kim Jong-hee...
Let me see that.
Give me that back.
That doesn't sound like a real name.
It is a real name. Give me that. Kim Jong-hee, who said she was ordered by Jong-un's father, Kim Jong-il, to bomb the airliner in 1987, killing 115 people, said she believes the son is still trying to establish himself following his father's death. In December 2011, Kim Jong-un is too young and too inexperienced, she told Australia ABC Television in an exclusive interview. ABC means the Australian Broadcasting Company, bud, because I can see the look on your face. You're all like, what?
Yeah, I didn't get it.
Well, now you know. Australian. They allowed to do that?
I think they've got to pay a royalty, don't they?
To who?
To ABC, the American company.
Why?
Why?
Yeah, because there's an ABC already.
Maybe these guys started before they did. You ever thought about that?
Well, it's America.
Doesn't mean America because it's... Anyway...
I'm just thinking, yes, because it is America, that we've got dibs.
We got dibs.
Well...
Yeah, don't say anything. Anyway, Kim Jong-un...
Let me see that. You jackass, it's Kim...
Give me that back. What are you guys grabbing copy out of my hand for, okay?
I might as well do it. Let me see.
Give me that.
Here, I got it. Throw it over here.
I'm going to start kicking. Give me that.
Okay, so he is okay. We've been leading up to this, Phil, because someone said that you had a bad shoulder.
Yes, I said I had a bad shoulder.
Not in that little game of keep away that we just orchestrated, which you fell right into. Good job, boys.
Thanks a lot, Ms. Gray.
Oh, so you guys grabbed the news copy away from me, started throwing it, see how I got a bad shoulder?
Exactly.
Well, it hurt like hell while I was trying to get those...
So you do not have a bad shoulder, so you can play in the third annual Ted's of Beverly Hills softball game on Saturday. Get Ted on the phone.
Now, wait a second. No, I cannot play in that game. I got other stuff I got to do. Wait a minute.
Get Mr. Bell on the phone.
Get right away.
Wait a second. Who's running the show, me or you?
Hold on, bud. Now what do you want?
I told Ted I can't play in that softball game because I am busy. I am busy. I'm busy with work. I'm busy writing some things. We're going to do a couple of, you know, it's nobody's business what I'm doing, but I'm writing some stuff. We're going to be presenting some stuff over the next few months, and I got to get my act together and do some writing this weekend, okay? And that's why I...
That's why you told Ted you had a damn junket.
I do have a bad shoulder. It does hurt.
Just doesn't hurt right now.
You know,
It just doesn't hurt right now.
It hurts right now, yes. It actually does hurt because right when you guys were making me play keep away, I noticed that I felt,
Just let me ask you, does this hurt?
Ow, yes, that hurt, bud. God, man.
Look at that. Well, look at that, man. Got on brass knuckles.
Give me those brass knuckles. What the hell are you doing, man?
I want to see if it hurt.
Yes, it hurt. Now look at this, man. Now here we go. We got another break. You calling up Ted?
Yeah.
We'll be back to Kim Jong-un and Kim Jong-il and the rest of these guys. I'm going to have to get new copy because you ripped it in half.
Yes, but we did it to prove a point.
Be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. That hurt, man.
Yes, it did.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did.
Didn't.
Phil Henry.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We're going to get Ted Bell on here in just a second. A reminder that our website, philhenryshow.com, has plenty of backstage passes left. In fact, we never run out of them, really. The backstage pass is an all-access pass to our website. Now, unlike a lot of radio websites where they're, you know, hey, here are the pictures from the contest we had this morning, and they're fine. We actually have real radio content on our site. We not only have real radio content, we have full shows. And we do not just have full shows. We have full shows that go back over a decade, 5,000 hours and counting, along with a video archive, along with the full year of KFI Saturday night shows we did here in Los Angeles, along with a bunch of miscellaneous video casts, interviews we've done for radio and television, TV pilots that we've done. We also have webisodes created by Stephen White, animated webisodes. We have an archive of the much talked about, rarely understood, very, very weird Milwaukee Lions broadcasts from the entire first season, all 16 games. Actually, all 15 games, right?
Yeah, didn't have no 16 game.
Didn't have a 16 game at forfeit.
They forfeited the last game of the season, the Lions did, to the Tampa Bay Gator, or the Tampa Gator Bait. I shouldn't say Tampa Bay because they don't want to have anything to do with the Buccaneers.
Who were the Buccaneers?
They stink.
Yeah, I don't get it about Tampa. I remember when they really were just jonesing for a football team. They get one, and they have a few bad years, and now they couldn't care less whether they lived or died. So the only team they got down there, they won the Eastern Division of the Phil Henry Football League, otherwise known as Dickman America, by, I don't know what their record. What was their record?
I think that was about 10-6.
Yeah, the Tampa Gator Bait finished 10-6. Anyway, make a long story short, the Milwaukee Lions, who didn't make the playoffs, they are the second worst team in the league. We've got all of the play-by-play, but the most important thing to remember is Jack I. Gagner doing the play-by-play. That guy's been fired by more teams. He has been fined by the FCC more times. He has been arrested more times. He's done more jail time. He has been in and out of rehab. In other words, he's fantastic. Jack I. Gagner, along with former Milwaukee Lion quarterback Brett Morrison, calling all the play-by-play from the 2012 season. So check it out at philhenryshow.com with a backstage pass. Here we go, man.
Ted of Beverly Hills. Steakhouse, come on down.
Everybody, come on down to Ted of Beverly Hills. We have a big announcement I'm going to make here in just a couple of minutes on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, but also, of course, a reminder that every day at Ted of Beverly Hills is a meet day.
Here at Ted's.
Meet and greet.
We want to put our meat in your mouth.
That's right. Once you meet and greet, then you want to put the meat in your mouth. We have a Kansas City steak, Phil. I got one. It's got your name on it.
I know that, and I want to get in there. I've, between doing the radio show and so many other things, but I got to get in there because I'm missing my Ted's of Beverly Hills after show dinner.
Which is, you like the porterhouse. This Kansas City that we've got, I am telling you, it's got your name on it. It literally does have your name on it. I wrote your name on it, and we put it on a little stick. You know the little sticks you used to get that says rare, medium rare, all that stuff?
Yeah.
We still use those at Ted's of Beverly Hills. We want all the parents out there to bring your kids in because the kids love it when they get their steak and it's got the little thing, the sign in it that says rare, medium rare. And we're thinking about doing that with the drinks for the kids. You know how kids love to have the Shirley Temple and the Roy Rogers, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to bring the drinks, and I've got a little tiny boat that I'm going to put in it with a sign that says Shirley Temple. And there'll be a little girl in the boat, and she'll look like she's shipwrecked or something. I don't know what the... We'll get the doll. And then we'll have a sign of a cowboy, and it says Roy Rogers, and he's in a boat. And to explain why a cowboy would be in a boat, we have, I don't think this is a good idea, but Jerry Reynolds, who does our marketing, thought we'd have a horse that's floating in the drink. And I thought it was a bad joke, don't you?
Yeah, for kids, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Jerry, is Jerry here? Yeah, I thought it was a bad joke. Do you think he's making a monkey out of me?
Who?
Jerry Reynolds.
No, I don't think. Well, I mean, that's an unusual suggestion.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. And I talked to Marcy about it when I got home. I went home for lunch today. I said, do you think this guy's chumping me? And she said, what? I said, he wants me to have a little boat with a Roy Rogers doll in it that we put in the top of the little boy's drinks, the Roy Rogers drink, and he's a cowboy. And Marcy said, oh, a cowboy in a boat. And that got me to thinking, boy, that is kind of stupid. How do we explain why the cowboy's in a boat? Well, maybe the horse is dead. And I know that's a bad thing, but what?
Well, he left the horse on land.
He left the horse on... What is he doing in a boat, though? You got to explain why he's in the boat.
How do you know why he's in the boat? Even if you have a dead floating horse, which is nothing you want to put into a child's drink.
No, no, I know that now. But...
Why is Roy Rogers in the boat?
Because the horse is dead.
No, but why is Roy... What if his horse was alive?
Then he'd be on the horse.
What if he had a large body of water to cross?
He would be on the horse. Haven't you ever seen the westerns? I'm sure you have.
Where they're riding the horse through... Yeah, through a river.
All right, well, that's what it is.
It's a river.
Yes. That's the way you explain it. But if he's in a boat on a river, he looks like the biggest puss. Excuse my French, but you don't want Roy Rogers. In other words, Phil, any cowboy that is in a boat on a river, he looks like some punk. He looks like a punk. You got all the other cowboys that are going across the river on the horse. I realize I'm getting into a big thing and I probably shouldn't have, you know.
Well, it is a little much to be worried about.
But hold on. Because I'm talking about the families that come in on Sundays. You got to make these kids happy that they'll never come back. They will never want to. They won't have anything to do with you. They'll stay away from you like you have AIDS, okay? So I've got to make these families happy. And the way to do it is to keep the kids happy. But I got to explain this logically. You're going to have some kid coming up to me and saying, why is Roy Rogers in the boat? You know, because my son's that way. You know, Josh, he loves to ask all those goofy questions. So, you know, I'm trying to answer the question. I would think that what Roy Rogers is doing is he's trying to go across the river. He was going to take his horse. He was going to ford the river like they do in the westerns.
Okay.
And instead what happened, the horse died and he had to get a boat.
Well, I it's a very strange way to have to explain something. I don't think you should do it. If Jerry Reynolds...
Hold on for a minute. What? Is Jerry on the phone? Tell him I want to see him. I want Jerry Reynolds here now. You understand that? I don't care what he's doing. Hey, how you doing? Good evening. Good evening. Right over here. We're starting to fill up a little bit here, Phil, but I wanted to mention that. And then I also wanted to... Margaret called me. You are supposed to be out there playing ball with us tomorrow. You know that, right?
Yeah, Ted, I told you...
You told me you had a bad arm, and Margaret just said that they played keep away with some news copy, and you were jumping up like you were, you know, you were going to the fifth floor like Jerry West or something. You know, like you were what's the guy, Dwight Yoakam? Who's the high jumper, Dwight Yoakam?
Dwight Yoakam, Dwight Stone?
Is that the guy? Who's Dwight Yoakam?
He's a country singer.
Oh, okay. They said you were high jumping for that news copy like you were Dwight Yoakam.
Dwight Stone is the high jumper.
Yeah, but they said you were doing it like Dwight Yoakam.
Is that good or bad?
I guess it's good. Margaret?
Yes, Ted.
Well, who's Dwight Yoakam?
Dwight Yoakam is a country singer, but my understanding is he's a very good high jumper.
Will you get out of here with Dwight Yoakam? The fact is, you know, the fact is, Ted, that I have a lot that I've got to do this weekend.
Yeah, Mr. Barrel, he's pumped. He doesn't want to be on the team.
Phil, I'm counting on you. You said you were going to be on the team, remember?
No, I did not say I was going to be on the team. And why do you need me, man? I'm not a great ball player.
Well, we need your size. We need a big guy. I want somebody big batting cleanup. I want to scare this guy. You know who we're playing, don't you?
No, I don't.
Didn't you tell him, Margaret?
No, I didn't want to tell him. I wanted you to tell him.
We're playing Hong Kong, Charlie.
The Chinese place.
Yeah, the Chinese. Oh, look at you. He throws it off like it's no big deal, the Chinese place. It's the Prince of Darkness. That's what it is. Hong Kong Charlie's is hell, is hell on earth. It represents every kind of hell to Ted Bell. Ted Bell, Hong Kong Charlie's, hell. Hong Kong Charlie's, no here, no hell. Ted Bell, happy. okay?
He's even got you speaking like a guy who speaks Chinese and English is a second language.
Look, you know, I don't know what you just said there. I guess you thought it was funny, but I didn't understand it. The point I'm trying to make...
Well, the point that you're trying to make here is that Hong Kong Charlie is your softball opponent tomorrow, and you need me in the lineup, but you want me to bat cleanup because I'm big or whatever. I haven't played baseball in a long time, man.
You haven't played basement?
Baseball.
Yeah, I noticed that, Teddy said. I haven't played baseball.
Yeah, you know what, Phil? Quit putting so much energy into saying no, and put a little bit of energy into saying yes.
I got a busy weekend coming up. I can't play. I'm sorry. I wish I could.
All right, how about doing a play-by-play, doing a Philcast of it? I know you don't want to do the TV. How about a radio cast or a podcast of the Dead of Beverly Hills versus Hong Kong Charlie?
What are you talking about?
Am I speaking Chinese? Just because I'm playing Hong Kong Charlie doesn't mean I'm speaking his language yet. That'll happen after they beat us when you don't play. Because if you don't play and Hong Kong Charlie beats us, I'm going to be speaking Chinese this time tomorrow night.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
What are you laughing about? Serious.
Phil, I don't know why you're laughing.
Are you kidding me? Did you hear what he just said?
Yeah, I said this time tomorrow night he's speaking Chinese.
This time tomorrow night he's going to be speaking Chinese, yeah.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
What am I going to do about what? He's playing a softball game against Hong Kong Charlie, okay? Ted, is this the fourth game or the third?
It's the fourth.
This is the fourth annual Ted's of Beverly Hills Softball Classic. Every year he wins. He beat Maestro's Steakhouse the first year. He beat BJ's Rib Shack the second year, whatever the hell that place was. Last year he beat some other place, the Cigar Room or something. This year he's taking on Hong Kong Charlie, and he'll probably beat him.
Well, Ted's worried because Hong Kong Charlie is it's an X factor. It's a Chinese place.
So? What was the cigar room?
Well, they serve meat.
Yeah, they serve pork. They serve a chop. They do chops.
They do a variety of lamb chop.
The what? The cigar place? I thought it was just a cigar room.
No, they also do chops. They do chops and steaks. Chops, steaks, filet. Do you understand? Finally.
Morgan, what are you getting pissed off about?
He's sticking me in the middle of this. Do you understand?
Gotta get out and gotta play. Otherwise, Ted's gonna... I don't know.
Well, what happens if I don't play? Is he gonna have a panic attack or something?
He's gonna get beat by Hong Kong Charlie. He's gonna have Hong Kong Charlie coming in every single night reminding him. And Ted is afraid that he's gonna do something that he will regret for the rest of his life. What is funny about that? Get Ted back on the phone. He just called up. I don't know what frame of mind he's in.
You know, you ought to spend less time worrying about Ted Bell. That guy's got nothing but money. Nothing but money.
He's a friend of mine, and I thought he was a friend of yours.
He is a friend of mine. And I would be there for him for something important. A softball game? Especially with the work that I have to do? I don't have it the way Ted's got it, okay? Hey, you know what? My hat's off to the guy. He's done a lot with his career. He's done a lot with that restaurant. I got to take a break, okay?
You're always taking a break, and that's another way of saying I have to avoid what you're saying.
No, this is another way of saying let's go to a break, and we'll talk about it when we come back from the break.
That's another way of saying we got sponsors we got to get to. Oh, wait a minute. No, we don't.
Just shut up. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll talk about Ted. Get him back on the phone, will you?
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Ted.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
On the Phil TV screen is a picture of a man by the name of Admiral George Stephen Morrison. And Admiral George Stephen Morrison, I'm afraid I misled people when I would talk about Admiral George Stephen Morrison, but not too much. You see a picture of this man. He passed on in 2008. He was a World War II veteran. He was a Navy aviator. He later became the captain of the Bonhomme Richard in 1963. This was years after Jonathan Winters was a Marine gunner on the Bonhomme Richard. Nonetheless, those two men did serve on the same ship. Admiral Morrison was the skipper on the Bonhomme Richard during the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which triggered the United States becoming ever more increasingly involved in Vietnam. He also has one other distinguishment, I think, a lot of people might think. He was the father of Jim Morrison, the lead singer of The Doors. And I always thought it was one of those curiosities and ironies of life that the father of Jim Morrison was also the commander of the ship that Jonathan Winters served on. But he was not Jonathan Winters' superior officer. In fact, he probably was about the same age as Jonathan Winters and, in fact, served on the ship years later. In World War II, when Winters was on the Bonhomie Richard, Admiral Morrison, I should say, was on was a Navy aviator flying flying for the Navy off of the decks of carriers going up against the Japanese. But that's Admiral George Stephen Morrison, and along with Jim Morrison, along with Jonathan Winters, one of many who served proudly aboard that aircraft carrier, the Bonhomie Richard. His son, Jim Morrison, dying in 1971 in Paris. And there's a whole story there. To me, it's one of those amazing tales that you got to take a whole long time trying to figure it out, you know.
Well, what's to figure out? He was the father of Jim Morrison.
Yeah, what do you got to figure out?
I'm talking about there's a sort of a dark poetry to all of this. Do you understand? Just to contemplate all of the stuff that's going on there. You got Jim Morrison, you got Admiral Morrison, you got Jonathan Winters, you got this ship, you got World War II. To me, there's a sort of a dark poetry. There's a kind of, there's some sort of a synchronicity going on there, but I want to figure out what that is. And so it takes time to think about it, Margaret, to put it the way you would.
Well, when you say synchronicity, all right, now you're starting to talk my language. When you start going on, Phil, about Jim Morrison, it was The Doors, I think you're just being a silly little fan. But now when you say synchronicity, all right, you and I are now on an even, now we're level as intellectuals. Now I, you know.
What does synchronicity mean?
Oh, God.
What's wrong?
I was beginning to warm to the topic, and then I realized where I was. What broke me out of my reverie was that.
Well, what is it?
Synchronicity is a word that means things line up, events, people, moments. They line up and they suddenly make sense for a very, perhaps, brief time, and then they sort of go their separate ways. It's a word that was used in the early psychoanalysis and is still used in psychology and psychoanalysis. When we talk about synchronicity, we talk about events having meaning, maybe just for that one person. For instance, Bud, weren't you telling me that you went by a tree with a hole in it the other day, and that reminded you of your accident, and you were going too fast?
Yeah, I was going fast on my motorcycle.
Exactly. And it was almost like a synchronistic that you would see this tree with a hole in it reminding you of this accident, and you're traveling at an excessive rate of speed. You sort of slowed down. That was a moment of synchronicity. That tree, had you not seen it, maybe you would have continued driving fast, and maybe you would have gotten in another accident.
Yeah, but that was God. God told me.
Yeah, man, that's probably God talking.
Yeah, okay, fine, you know.
Well, Phil, don't be an atheist about it.
I'm not an atheist. I'm just saying that's a kind of a synchronistic thing. All right, it's God, you know, maybe God's synchronicity. I don't know. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking here. We're going to get him back on the line here on the Phil Martin Show. Will you turn that down, bud? It distorted, man.
Sorry.
What are you doing?
Ted,
what are you doing?
Of Beverly Hills.
I was going to start talking about
Steakhouse.
Something.
Come on,
Ted. Ted Bell here at Ted's in Beverly Hills. I have been talked into coming back on the air even after I was stunned, almost like a beef, a side of beef going, oh, forget it. What's with you, kid?
What do you want to say?
I wanted to say that what you said to me, not wanting to play on my softball team this weekend, you know, I might as well have been a steer going down the ramp, Phil, and you're standing there waiting to stun me with an axe. That's how I felt. That's how I felt.
Ted, your drama is almost comic.
Oh, is it really? Let me explain something to you, Phil.
You know, Ted, I've been trying...
Hold on, Margaret. I don't mean to interrupt you. Let me explain something to you, Phil. I asked you to be on that softball team. I thought you said you were going to play softball.
If I wasn't busy.
No. I don't remember anything about if I wasn't busy.
If I wasn't busy, I would play softball.
All right. So if you weren't busy, you were going to play softball. Tomorrow, we're playing Hong Kong Charlie. Okay? Do I have to say more?
I understand that Hong Kong Charlie's significant. I don't know what the problem is.
He's the only guy, it's the only joint in Beverly Hills we haven't beat. We've beaten Maestro's Steakhouse. Do you understand what it took to beat those guys? Maestro Steakhouse, those guys were going to steal me of every celebrity customer I ever had. Well, we beat back the challenge. Then comes that BJ rib joint. Then comes that cigar room. Well, they're starting to serve chops and steaks and all that stuff. Now comes Hong Kong Charlie. This is dangerous because this guy serves Chinese food, all right? I can't compete with that. As you well know, Chinese food is the favorite food of every cheap creep that... Oh.
Well, that's a great way to talk about your customers.
I'm not talking about my customers. I'm talking about the cheap creeps.
Well, then what are you worried about?
Because if there's more of them than there are of my customers, I'm in big trouble. Now, I got to beat Hong Kong Charlie so he doesn't keep coming into my restaurant, because I know what he's going to do. He's done it to other guys. He walks in and goes, hey, Ted Bell, you know, you do that Chinese accent better than I do, Bill. You know, can you imagine this guy's going to come into my restaurant and, hey, Ted Bell, Hong Kong Charlie is open, and Hong Kong, you know.
All right, hold on, and we'll be right back.
Well, how long do you expect me to hold on? I just was holding on. What if I had to take a leak, and you're telling me to hold on?
All right, we'll be right back with Ted Bell and others. We've got other news to report on. I can't keep going on this softball game.
Why don't you just, again, Phil, it's like, clear your throat, get a drink of water.
We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show. Don't go away. Don't go away.
Or you can go away if you want.
Well, technically, yes, you can go away if you want. But I can't keep you there.
But don't go away.
Yeah, our choice would be that you not go away.
Phil Henry.
I think we've made it clear. Famous Phil Henry Show till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Truth is our bitch here on this late-night radio show with Margaret Gray, Bud Dickman, Robert Leonard, and others. And our radio show will become as well a podcast this coming summer, and we will be returning to our traditional format of phone calls at that time. We also are online at philhenryshow.com. We also have a couple of podcasts that we do, one of which is the Bobby Dooley podcast. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Today rolls out part one of her conversation with the great comic actor and comedian Chris D'Elia. And I'll tell you, because I was there, I witnessed this. It really, it degenerates into something real strange, and a lot of it has to do...
Don't tell me, with her husband Steve?
You got it.
That man, that Steve Dooley, is... There is something seriously wrong with him. Did he? I don't want to ask too many questions. Did he have his hands shoved in his pocket?
Yeah, he's always looking for the joy hole.
Hold on for a minute. Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Bud said it.
Well, all right. So, and Chris noticed it, and it went off from there. So check out the Bobby Dooley podcast. It's on iTunes. It's on SoundCloud. It's at the Sideshow Network. You can also find it at philhenryradio.com, and you access that by way of a link on our homepage at philhenryshow.com, the Bobby Dooley podcast, two-parter, Chris D'Elia. Coming up, John Ratzenberger, one of the iconic comic actors of our time with his great work on Cheers. And we're also going to have Jane Wells, the Emmy Award-winning reporter from CNBC. Jane is a real... funny lady, a great reporter, and she's a Bobby Dooley fan, so Bobby's excited about interviewing her. All ahead on the Bobby Dooley podcast. Let's see, what else? Oh, we've got Ted Bell. He is sitting waiting for us because we still have... Would you quit hitting the jingle, man, when I haven't finished talking?
Gotta get moving with it, man.
You're taking too much time, Phil. Don't screw the dog, Phil.
Wait a minute.
And over at Ted to Beverly Hills, come on down, ladies and gentlemen, and have one of the finest steaks that you'll ever have in your days on this planet. These steaks, Porterhouse, Kansas City, New York, the prime rib. The prime rib. That's you! Excuse me. Did you dump that?
No, we did not.
Oh, all right. Sorry, I apologize for sneezing, folks, but just as I was getting to the prime rib room, suddenly I could almost smell that prime rib, and it was so realistic that it made me sneeze because the pepper that we use in our prime rib, you know, we dry rub it. And
What does dry rub mean?
What does what?
What does dry rub, when you say you dry rub something?
Well, I'd love to be able to answer that, but I can't see your face, and that's the part.
Yeah, now, Ted, I can see his face.
All right, I'm going to answer that, but I want Margaret to report if she sees any kind of a smirk.
What are you talking about?
What do you mean, what am I talking about?
I'll do it, Ted. He's going to explain to you what dry rub is. Now, see, I'm looking at your face. You're going to turn this into a joke?
Why would I turn it into a joke?
Dry rub.
I don't want you turning this into shtick, okay? Dry rub.
Yeah, just because Ted's dry rubbing it.
Hey, and I want that to keep its mouth shut. What is it, Dickman?
Yeah.
Hey, Dickman, this is Ted.
Yes, sir.
Don't do it. Don't do it, Dickman. You understand what I'm saying, right?
Yes, sir, I do.
Don't even go there. You don't go there with Ted Bell. You could go there with Phil. You might be able to go there with Robert. You might be able to, I don't know who. I don't know what. I don't want to know. After I get off of Phil's show, I don't want to know what takes place on that show. I just don't want to. But you could go there if you want. But you don't do it with Ted Bell. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, dry rub.
Yeah, it's better that you don't, Ted, because I can see Phil smirking.
I'm not smirking. I was smiling at him, what he was saying to Bud, you know.
Oh, yeah. That was it. Dry rub. I can't talk about what it is to dry rub something, because, Henry, you turn everything into a filthy joke. And that's the problem with the steakhouse business. That's the problem with those of us who want to really, you know, introduce people to the great world of a good steak. Delicious, well-cooked steak. I can't talk about dry aged because that turns into a filthy joke. I can't talk about dry rub. You guys turn that into a filthy joke. Everything having to do with meat these days is a dirty joke. And
you know what, Ted? The only guy that's making all this stuff a dirty joke is you.
How am I doing that?
By bringing it up. I wouldn't even have thought about it. I happen to know what dry rub is.
Well, then why did you ask me?
Because I wanted you to explain it to the audience. Okay?
All right. Well, then why don't you explain it to the what do you call it?
The audience.
Yeah.
Because I'm not the restaurant owner. You're the guy.
Well, I'm not going to sit here and embarrass myself talking about dry rubbing something while you're going, giving, you know, hand signals to Bud and waving into the... Boy, I tell you something, Henry, for you to laugh in my face like that.
I'm not laughing. I just think it's a ridiculous fear that you have, that I'm going to be, you know, waving at people in the camera and saying, Ted's talking about dry rub.
Well, see? I didn't even articulate it, and you're doing it.
Mr. Bell, you're going, you're starting to sound...
You are getting a little spastic, Ted.
Yeah, I know, because that's what this guy does to me. Look, let's get back to what we were talking about.
Okay, let's get back to you talking me into playing softball tomorrow for your team.
I'm not going to talk you into anything.
I'm telling you, you're playing who?
I just got done telling you I'm playing Hong Kong Charlie.
Hong Kong Charlie. Okay, now this is the guy with the Chinese restaurant.
Right. Now this guy, Hong Kong Charlie, has been stopping in at my place every day at 12 noon sharp. He never misses. He never misses. Every day we're open, which is Tuesday through Sunday. We're closed on Monday. He stops in at 12 noon. And he always says the same thing. Ted Bell, Hong Kong Charlie, take you down. Ha, ha, ha. He spins on his heel and does one of these Japanese military steps out the door.
He's Chinese.
He's what?
He's Chinese.
Well, then why is he walking like he's Japanese? I don't know. I you know.
Well, how do you know it's a Japanese military step?
It's that big high goose step.
That's the Chinese and the Koreans.
All right, that's what he does. He comes and he goes, Ted Bell, Hong Kong Charlie's going to take you down. Oh, yeah, something like that. Then he turns around and he does this big high goose step out of my restaurant every day at noon for 4 years. And I finally said to him, okay, you want some? You want a piece of me, do you? Is that what you want? I said, how about a softball game at Beverly Hills High? And he said, Hong Kong Charlie been waiting for the... You know, he loves to put it into that broken English. He goes, Hong Kong Charlie been waiting for this opportunity for 4 years. And then the goose step.
What? Is this guy nuts or something?
Nuts? He's crazy like a fox. This guy has been biding his time and biding his time. He wants to take Ted Bell down on the softball diamond and establish Hong Kong Charlie's as the place to eat. He wants all the Beverly Hills. He wants all the old money. He wants all the new young money. He wants it all, man. Now, he just heard that Matt Damon's selling that house he's got in Miami Beach. Why he was living there, I got no idea. But you know where he's going to move? He's moving to Beverly Hills. That means Matt Damon, who... comes into my restaurant when he's in town. You understand? Matt Damon comes into Tens of Beverly Hills. This guy, Hong Kong Charlie, thinks he's going to be pulling Matt Damon's head off of his bar. Now, I'll tell you, I've pulled Matt Damon's head, his face out of more pools of vomit than any...
All right, let's forget about that for a minute.
Well, I'm telling you.
Let's forget about that. It doesn't make any difference whether I play on your team or not. I haven't played in a long time, man. You put me in the cleanup spot? You got a lot more faith in my hitting than I've got.
I need a big guy in there to scare Hong Kong Charlie. He's going to be on the mound. He's never met you. Okay, you're going to come up and you're going to scare that guy right out of his bull hair. Well, I better not say. You'll scare him right into a permanent.
Jeez.
I'm telling you.
Well, look, Ted, I'm telling you, I would do it if I could, but I think this is one moment in life where you need to just stand on your own 2 feet.
Oh, will you listen to this?
Phil, that is quite presumptuous of you.
This is one moment in life. All right, I'm sorry I said stand on your own 2 feet, that Phil Henry can't be there for you.
What are you talking about? When have you ever been there for me? I buy time on your show?
You buy time on my show, you come on here... You say whatever you want, however you want to say it, whenever you want to say it. I never edit you, nothing. The few times that I've tried, you had David Hall jumping down my throat. You come on and you plug your restaurant left and right. You take over the radio show pretty much. And what do? I don't do anything, man. I just kind of, I countenance it and I put up with it.
You what?
I countenance it.
What's that mean?
It means that he basically allows it.
Well, I don't know what that means. So you're not going to do it, huh?
I tell you this much, Ted, and I mean this sincerely. If I can get away, I will. But if I were you, I would fill out the lineup card without me in it.
So Hong Kong, all right, hey, Charlie, if you're listening, and I don't even know if he knows I do this thing or not. He probably does. The guy, he knows everything. So, Charlie, if you're listening, Phil Henry may be in my lineup tomorrow. And if he is, oh, baby, I don't want to be you. But even if he isn't, Charlie, you ain't going to win nothing. Hong Kong Charlie, I'm going to run you out of... This time next year, it's going to be a vacant lot down there. You watch me.
Well, that, I would say, is a very positive attitude. Although, why do you got to threaten to run the guy out of business?
I don't... What do you mean threaten to run? I'm the guy. Do you know that this guy put up a billboard that says, I'm Hong Kong Charlie? Did you know that?
In Beverly Hills.
Thank you. Beverly Hills. Put it up off the 405. I'm Hong Kong Charlie. I said, I'm Ted Bell. Now, he knows that I got billboards all over town saying, I'm Ted Bell. I am Ted Bell, too. Right?
Yes, you're Ted Bell.
Okay. Why do you hesitate? What's going on with him anyway?
I don't know, Ted. He's been really, he's just been very, very recalcitrant.
There's nothing wrong with me, Ted.
Well, then what do you, when I say I'm Ted Bell, you should react, say, yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
And now this Hong Kong Charlie put up a billboard, and I went down there and I said, Charlie, you know, enough's enough. Everybody knows I'm Ted Bell. And he says to me, okay, fine, I'm Hong Kong Charlie. I said, well, so what? No one cares about that. He says, they will. I put up enough billboards. I said, Charlie, you're ripping me off. People are going to see you as a cheap, stinking, lousy Chinese dirt.
Watch it, okay, Ted? Just relax. Go on out there, kick his ass. I know the team that you got. You got some big, big names. Guys that know how to hit, I don't want to say, but there's a few, you know... actors and stuff.
No, don't say anything, okay? I'm going to roll them out later. Because when Hong Kong Charlie sees who I have on my team, and he sees James Brolin, step up to the plate.
What? You just said one name.
Well, I'm going to say one name. And when he sees him step up to the plate, Hong Kong Charlie is going to have a Hong Kong cardiac. Huh? What do you think of that?
That's very funny, Ted.
Yeah, pretty good, Mr. Bell. He's
going to have a Hong Kong cardiac. Hong Kong Charlie, you out there listening? Hong Kong Charlie, you're going to dump a Hong Kong load when I get done with you. Hey, Hong Kong.
All right, thank you very much, Ted. We got to take a break. We are so late. We'll be right back. Hong Kong Charlie and Ted's of Beverly Hills in the fourth annual Ted's of Beverly Hills Softball Classic. He sponsors this thing. He beats all the teams he plays. Maybe not. He's going up against Hong Kong Charlie tomorrow at Beverly Hills High School. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Henry's gonna let me get right tomorrow.
Come on
down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. Hey, tomorrow is the Ted's of Beverly Hills Softball Classic. Come on out and watch us take on Hong Kong Charlie. We'll beat him, and then we invite all of our fans into Ted's of Beverly Hills for a Ted on me. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
What do you mean, uh-oh? What does that mean, uh-oh?
Ted.
No. What does that mean, uh-oh?
When you're giving out booze, okay?
Ted, why are you raining on his parade?
I don't know, Margaret. God knows, I work my ass off, and I'm trying to get people out to support us.
You can't give away. All I'm saying is giving away booze is a problem.
I said, Ted. One, I didn't say drink for free, did I? If you come into Tens of Beverly Hills tomorrow.
And a lot of those people drive trucks.
All right, they park across the street.
And a lot of them don't know what a peach cobbler is.
They're coming into the... What do you got to know about booze? Here's the thing, and I'd like you to tell it to your audience. Tens of Beverly Hills is a very high-class place. We don't valet anything under, say, $70,000, okay? So you're going to have to park it. There's a vacant lot down the street. I'm sorry, folks. It's just... And also, if you're going to eat in the dining room, of course, you have to be dressed appropriately, which means a sports jacket. And we would like you to wear a pants that are of a certain cotton fiber. Now,
that's not the rules. You're trying to make it difficult for my listeners because you don't trust them because you think they're white trash.
How dare you, Phil? I never used the word white trash.
No, all right, but you're thinking it.
I don't want people coming in the tank tops. They'll be thrown out. I want the guys wear sports jackets. The women wear dresses, okay? No pants unless they're tight. Now, you know...
I don't know how you stay open with a dress code like that.
Why?
I mean, you require women to wear really tight pants if they wear pants at all.
That's right. What do you want from me? If you wear pants and you're female, they got to be tight. I can't get my finger between the belt and the inseam.
I don't know how you get away with it.
Don't worry about it. So if you're listening to me and you like Phil Hendry, then most likely it's a problem. But if you come in, the guys wear jackets, the women wear dresses, unless you wear pants, and they got to be skin tight. And then what's the other thing?
Well, you did say there's a minimum on the entrees.
Yeah, a lot of places have a minimum in the bar. We got a minimum in the restaurant. A minimum $50 entree.
Good God, man! How do you expect people to afford that?
Will you listen to you? God, Bill, you know, I got to make a living.
$50 steak? Don't you have anything? I mean, why do people have to... Why are you punishing my listeners?
Because I want to make sure they make the grade, okay? That's all.
And yet you want them out there rooting for your team, don't you?
Yeah, and I'm giving them a free drink, too.
All right, folks, that's tomorrow, Beverly Hills High School.
Yeah, and I would love to be able to say you can come out and see Phil Hendry, but he's going to be busy. He's going to be busy doing his thing while I fight for survival, while I fight for the pride of boob.
Ted, you know what the doctor said to you? Let me get Frank on the phone because he's dealing with the same thing, you know.
I don't have syphilis.
No, I know, but you're getting a little bit of that confusing dementia.
What are you talking about?
Hold on. Get Frank. What?
What are you talking about?
I got a little bit of a neuro problem.
What is it?
Well, I for some reason when I... Say the name of my restaurant, it always comes out Boob of Beverly Hills, or Boob of Beverly Hills, something like that.
He can't say Ted's of Beverly Hills consistently.
Why?
I just got done telling you. I've got some kind of a neural problem.
Well, what is it, man?
I don't know. They thought it might have been a stroke or something.
You know what, man? You're getting... See what's happening to you? You had a stroke?
They think. They're not sure. It could be something like some sort of a weird Bell's palsy.
A Bell's palsy.
Yeah, like a virus.
See, the Bell's palsy, it will go away. Now, Bell's palsy generally, didn't you say you had it, Phil?
I never had it, but a friend of mine got it.
What happened?
Well, he had it and it only lasted for a couple of weeks, but it literally either paralyzed the muscles on one side of his face.
Oh, God. God!
Hold on for a minute, because it went away, because Bell's palsy is a virus. And he started talking like this, you know.
Oh, that's just fantastic. This guy was on the radio?
Yeah. And he actually stayed on the air. It was pretty funny. His name is Rich. And he was doing traffic.
Look at how you're warming to the topic. Good God, Phil, this is my life.
Hold on, will you, please? I said it went away.
All right. Well, I got this thing. When I say Ted's of Beverly Hills, sometimes it comes out, boob of Beverly Hills or boobs of Beverly Hills. That's what's been saying. What I've been saying lately, and I can't afford. I sure as hell can't afford to say Hong Kong Charlie at Beverly Hills or something like that. It's going to ruin me.
No, it's not going to ruin you. It went away. He was doing traffic reports. There's actually we joke about it now. I remember Rich
on the air talking like this and saying, hey, the traffic out on the 101 freeway. It sounded pretty funny.
Why'd they keep him on the air?
I guess he insisted. I don't know. He just, you know, they kept him on the air. Your thing, though, man, you say is most likely the same thing?
Maybe. That's what the doctor said. He never heard of anything like it, but he can't see anything else wrong. Just when I say Ted's of Beverly Hills, it's like Boobs of Booberly Hills.
Well, you don't say Booberly Hills.
I did one time.
What a weird thing, man.
Tell me about it. So tomorrow, when I got Hong Kong Charlie breathing down my neck, and if I say Boobs of Booberly Hills, that Chinese... Have you ever had a Chinese guy laugh in your face? It's nothing but teeth. It's all teeth. All teeth, all the time.
You're going to have people accusing you of racism. You're going to have people accusing you of all kinds of bigotry.
No, they're not.
All teeth?
Well, I'm telling you, if you haven't walked the walk, my man, don't talk the talk, okay? I've been there. Been there, done that. I've had Hong Kong Charlie this far from my nose laughing, and it is nothing but teeth. I'm Ted Bell.
Boy, he just hangs up whenever he wants.
Well, you told him it's his time.
It is. He's paying for it, isn't he?
No, he's not paying for it. No, he's not paying for this part of the show. He usually comes on every other Friday. But today we let him on because he had this whole problem with Hong Kong Charlie. So, folks, if you're in the neighborhood, go on out and see Ted's of Beverly Hills versus Hong Kong Charlie's. And this is the fourth annual. Ted is the sponsor of this, and he gets his softball team together. Do these guys play in any other league?
I think they do a lot of exhibition games and stuff.
Yeah, they do a lot of exhibition and challenge team. Try to challenge the Dodgers.
What do you mean he tried to challenge the Dodgers?
He wanted to play the Dodgers in softball.
All right, we'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Henry show with more serious news. Kid Rock regrets being a Republican. Get a load of that. Kid Rock, we'll talk about that and more with Larry Grover. We come back, world-famous Phil Henry show.
Get that Hong Kong on the phone, right? Charlie? Yeah, Ted Bell. I just got done doing the Phil Henry show. I'm going to tell you something. If you laugh at me again, and all I see are your squinty eyes and your teeth.
Phil Henry.
I don't want to explain. I was just looking over. I don't know what happened to me, but I've become quite the fan of the Premier League of English soccer. And I think it's because of this time of year. I can't get into the NBA at this time of year. I can't get into hockey. It's just that's the way it's always been. And, you know, I used to watch the spring football leagues when they had spring football. They don't have it anymore. So when Fox started airing the soccer and they have the Fox Soccer Channel, I started watching it, and I found myself becoming more and more drawn into it.
Yes, but you're sitting there, and you're looking at the standings and the games. I don't understand. How do they play it?
Well, they're kicking a ball around.
Well, I know they kick a ball around, but so what is that?
They kick the ball around, just like they hit a puck around. You know, it's going from one end to the other.
Okay, and the first person to kick the ball into the...
Yeah, you gotta kick it into a net.
Into the net.
Yeah, the goal.
And then they win?
No, the team with the most balls kicked into the net.
The most balls kicked what?
Into the net, Margaret.
I don't know what you're saying, Phil.
Yeah, okay. Even though Kid Rock went red in the last election, he's not entirely on board with the current GOP agenda. The rocker, who threw his support behind Mitt Romney in the 2012 election to no apparent damage... I don't think anybody that listens to you, kid, I don't think they understand anyway, you know.
Would you, Romney? Okay.
Anyway.
All right, Kid Rock, what are you talking about?
Nothing, I shouldn't have said anything. The rocker who threw his support behind Mitt Romney in the 2012 election is now sounding off against the Republicans who have supported various acts of legislation in Congress to raise concert ticket prices. Kid Rock and President Obama, no hard feelings after the election. That's one of the times I'm effing embarrassed to be a Republican, Rock tells Rolling Stone. It's effing Republican lawmakers passing those laws, you dumbasses. They already did it in New York, and they're trying to do it in Michigan. I even called some of those guys to try and stop it. Of course, he also directed his vitriol at Ticketmaster for their use of service charges. They're taking an effing $5 service charge, he says,
also noting he's more of a libertarian than a Republican these days. It's 25% of the effing ticket. That's effed up. But I've beaten them as much as I can. Then Walmart stepped in and agreed to charge just $20, and it includes parking. Will you be attending his $20 concert? Question mark? Asks the people there at TMZ. We'll find out. Kid Rock, what do you think, bud?
Well, I think Kid Rock in many ways represents a lot of people like me, but in many ways he doesn't.
Like what?
Well, like, I don't understand, but why, what is...
What is it to be a Republican?
Yeah.
Well, then you don't understand. The guy might as well not even talk politics. You don't get it.
Yeah, I do. I just don't know what he means.
What are you talking about, man? Do you understand that Kid Rock has a certain political belief system?
Yeah.
And you know that it's sort of conservative. It's opposed to what traditionally is the entertainer's point of view, which is generally a liberal one.
Yeah, a lot of entertainers are like Obama.
Name's Obama, man. Why do you keep calling him Obama?
Yeah, that's... I didn't. I said Obama.
No, you said Obama. Every time you talk about Obama, you say Obama. You doing it on purpose?
What?
Are you doing it on purpose? Because I noticed that, too.
No, I'm not doing it on purpose.
I don't like it. I don't, you know... I think it's fine to entertain the conservative point of view. I think it rounds out the attitude of the show. But I don't like all of this conservatism. And I certainly don't like Bud being some sort of a mole for the Kid Rocks. I think we have to be four square. We've got to stand strong and tall. As an entertainment product originating in California. And we've got to come down solid on the side of President Obama. And the Democratic Party.
Well, that's not going to happen, so...
Well, what do you mean it's not going to happen?
It's not going to happen, Margaret, so knock it off, okay? You know, we're going to think things the way we think things, and we're going to do what we do, and we're not going to be solid anything.
You realize what you're risking.
Oh, would you knock it off?
You want me a Obama?
Hey, man, you said so Obama again.
I can't even get these guys to pronounce his name. What are you worried about, Margaret? He can't even pronounce a name right.
I'm worried of what this means to you, Woo... As you attempt to get back out and do more reads and do more auditions.
What? What are you talking about?
You know what happened.
Are you talking about that? Here we go again with that one, man. I did an audition. I'll never forget. I was auditioning for a TV show. It was about, I don't know, 5 years ago. I've completely forgotten about it. And,
Well, I'm reminding you of it.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I went in to do an audition, and I won't say, I'm not going to bring up the show. If anybody mentions the show, I'll kill you. I'll kill you. Do you understand?
You're going to kill me?
Yes, I'll kill you. I don't want the show mentioned. I went in to audition for a show, and the producer, the guy who was going to listen to my audition, first embarked on a series of questions about my politics, because I had been very vocal politically on the air. And it was kind of unusual because I'm generally just, you know, I do comedy or I attempt to do comedy and I don't really, I don't like to comment politically. I didn't in those days. The events just kind of forced it out of me.
Well, that isn't true, Phil.
Yes, events forced it. 9/11 changed a lot of things. Anyway, this guy started asking me all of these ideas that I had, all these opinions I had, all this stuff. And I answered, and it really flustered me because he was opposed to everything I was saying. And then I went up to do the audition, and I just completely screwed it up. I mean, I went up on every line. It just was terrible. And in retrospect, I believe that he did that for a reason. I mean, it's to see just how well you know the part. How well do you know the character? How well can you transition from one thing to another? I mean, it was brilliant, you know, to be honest with you.
Well, yes, but I don't think it was fair. I think that kind of thing just pushes an actor away as opposed to embraces him to the process. It doesn't bring us together. It separates us. Why, years ago...
Margaret, do you mind if I just...
Go ahead.
So, anyway, I thought it was good because you got to know it so well that no matter what distracts you, no matter what's going on, you know it really well. And I didn't. And I didn't get the job. And I remember I was kind of pissed off at first... But in the years since I've thought about it, I thought, oh, that's actually pretty cool the way the guy did that, you know?
So in other words, this guy, he butchered up your chance to get a job, and you like it?
I like that he forced me into realizing that if I'm distracted, I don't have the character down, and I didn't have the lines down, and that's not good. You should have it down so solid, man, that it's like it's a second skin you're wearing.
So there, that's where that's at. I didn't, you know, you can say that it's all about the Hollywood liberal thing, but for me, I didn't look at it that way. All right, so in any event, Matt Damon is selling his 20... So we all done with Kid Rock?
Well, I just think Kid Rock, you know, has a right to his opinion and everything.
Whatever, okay?
What do you mean, whatever?
You don't know what you're talking about, man. Do you agree with Kid Rock?
About what?
What he just said about the ticket prices.
Well, yeah, they're too high.
Well, everybody knows prices are too high.
Do you want him to... Do you want to vote for Democrats?
I don't know.
All right, so,
Man, why don't you just shut up, man? You didn't add anything.
You don't add anything either.
Yeah, I do add more than you do.
Yeah, you add nothing. I mean, the only thing you can weigh in is whether Obama, well, on account of you being black...
Hey, watch it.
Told you, man.
Hold on. What is it, bud? Every time you look at Robert and he's black, you think, well, the only thing he should talk about is Obama, or, excuse me, Bobama?
No.
Well, then knock it off. Matt Damon lists Miami Beach mansion for $20 million. Matt Damon stands to be about $20 million richer in the near future, or at least if all things go according to plan. Well, that is if he has the place paid off, he stands to be $20 million richer. However, if it isn't, then he...
What do you mean?
I mean, if he... Never mind. If the bank still holds the paper on the place, okay?
Well, I imagine Matt Damon just put cash down for that. I don't know.
I don't either. I don't think he did. Are you kidding? In any event, it depends on what he bought the house for. How much, you're right, how much he paid down and how much the bank carried, if the bank carried anything. In any event, he stands to be about $20 million richer in the near future, at least if all things go according to plan. The Oscar winner's officially listed his Miami Beach mansion for exactly that amount, with high hopes for a buyer with big pockets and a penchant for waterfront views. Oh, man. Woo! One glance at the immaculate abode, and it's crystal clear that the Biscayne Bay property is the epitome of luxury, offering endless opportunities to soak up the sun, lounge by the pool, and, well, live the life. So what do you get for $20 million? For starters, the sprawling estate boasts 7 bedrooms, 10 bathrooms.
Why do they have more bathrooms?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they got a guest bathroom. They got a bathroom, you know.
That just goes to show you something I've always said. People are going to spend more time going to the bathroom.
It does make sense.
Yeah, okay, so what does that do for me, huh?
What does something have to do for you?
Okay, so people spend more time going to the bathroom than what, bud?
Than sleeping.
I don't think so. You spend 8 hours, or let's say you're a bad sleeper. Let's say you spend 4 hours a day sleeping. Do you spend 4 hours a day sitting on a toilet?
Maybe.
Yeah, it does depend.
You don't spend 4 hours a day on a toilet. 4 hours. Understand, okay?
Did you ever go in a bathroom for a long time?
Yeah, but I haven't spent in a toilet longer than the longest time I ever spent in a bathroom.
You're not going to tell us how long you spent in a bathroom.
Yes, I am, to prove a point. Why shouldn't I? This guy, how long have you spent in a bathroom, bud?
The longest time I ever sat on a toilet. You mean not just tying my shoe or reading a magazine?
The longest time you ever sat on a toilet using it for the reason you're supposed to use it for.
Okay. The longest time I ever sat on a toilet, probably 2 hours.
What, man? You don't spend 2 hours on a toilet.
What do you mean 2 hours? Did you go to the doctor after that, man? Did you go get surgery? What are you talking about, 2 hours?
2 hours. 2 hours.
It took you 2 hours to use the toilet.
Well, no, but it took me about 5 minutes, but I was reading a Preacher Gone to Texas comic. And I didn't get up off the toilet.
Are you listening to what I'm asking you, man? I'm asking you, using the toilet, how long have you sat on it?
Well, what if he was using it to read the book? Fine, Phil, but you're not being very specific.
You mean for me to be on a toilet for to go?
That's what I'm asking you, bud. That's what I'm asking you. How long have you sat on a toilet using it for the reason it's there? Not sitting there to read a book, not tying your shoes, not forgetting, oh, I already used the toilet, but I think I'll just continue reading the book. No. See that time you just told me about?
Yeah.
That's 5 minutes. You said it took you 5 minutes?
Yeah.
That's 5 minutes. That's the only amount of time we're going to count for you using the toilet. You still say you use the toilet 4 hours a day?
I do. I swear to God, I do.
Okay. I'll ask the question again. What's the longest time you've ever spent sitting on a toilet?
Probably 5 minutes.
5 minutes. And yet you're telling me you use the toilet 4 hours a day.
Yes.
Okay, how does that happen?
A lot of, how many times does five go into 4 hours? The lot of times you're going, oh, okay, better go back and do more. Oh, better go.
Man, that's a lot of time going to the toilet.
Are you trying to tell me, man, that you go back, five goes into 60? I mean, I can't even think, 30? No, 1, 2, 20. No, it's, how many times does five go into 60? Goes in 12 times. Goes in 12 times. Five goes into 60. So that's 12 times to the bathroom in 1 hour, times four, that's 48 times you're in the toilet for 5 minutes during the day.
Yeah, figure it out.
Well, it is feasible.
No, it's not feasible. 48 times, 48. Good God, there's 24 hours in a day. That's two times per hour if you were awake for 24 hours. But let's say you're only awake for 8 hours. I can't even do the math anymore.
Yeah, see? See? Because it comes out okay. Don't come out weird.
No, man, it's weird. I'm telling you, I'm going to do the math. We'll take a break. Why am I wasting time with this?
I don't know.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth.
Why
is
am
our
I talking
bitch.
About this?
The Phil Hendry Show.
Matt Damon has 10 bathrooms.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're going to bring on Dr. Ron Tarner. Dr. Tarner from the Cloverdale Observatory in Mountain Meadow, Colorado. Good friend of the show. And we've got a little bit of a math problem here, Dr. Tarner. And I really am sorry to bother you.
Well, Bill, it's no bother at all.
I'm very happy. But it's when you hear the nature of this, you may be sorry that I called. Bud Dickman is with us. As you know, Bud's a part of my show staff. And Bud has claimed that he spends 4 hours a day sitting on a toilet doing the thing that you need to do when you're sitting on a toilet.
And he said 4 hours.
Yeah, Dr. Tarnan, can you hear me?
Yeah, Bud, I can hear you. So you're on the toilet 4 hours a day.
Right. Now, we did the preliminary math on that. 4 hours a day, that's 48, and he says he's never on a toilet longer than 5 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, so we did the preliminary math on that. That means 48 separate trips to the bathroom.
Yeah, that comes out 48 separate trips because you've got 12 times to the bathroom in a 1 hour span. If you are 4 hours would be 12, 4 times 2, and you put 3 over. Hold on for just a minute. What do you do with the ashtray? Don't move my ashtray. I'm smoking a cigar, Phil. I'm over here at the Astronomers Club tonight. We had a guest speaker. Bill Sargent, Dr. William Sargent, do you know him?
No, I do not.
He's a very fascinating speaker.
Yeah, Dr. Tarner, that's all well and good, but we're trying to figure out how long I do to squeeze it out.
Yeah, Bud, that's great. If you don't mind, I'm talking to Phil right now. I'll figure that out in a minute. So anyway, we had William Sargent, he's a wonderful guy, very funny guy, too. And, he gave a paper on the Hubble and the latest a discovery of that alpha star that we were talking about.
That's the star that they think may have
a similar solar system, yeah.
All right. So, again, it sounds like you're having a nice, relaxing evening and with colleagues, and I apologize.
Well, we, a lot of them brought their kids with them. I didn't know this was a family night. I would have had my son come with me. So we're having ice cream right now, but they brought the kids, and that part I didn't know about. But I guess who I saw, by the way.
Who?
I saw Hawking.
Stephen Hawking was there.
Oh, yeah, he came. He wanted to hear the paper, and he's wheeling through the place. I've never seen a guy look so arrogant riding around on a scooter. You know, I've never seen a guy drink through a straw look so arrogant, you know.
All right, if you don't mind, I don't want to get into that.
Well, neither do I.
All right, so, Bud, we wanted to know how many times to the bathroom he'd be going in a day.
All right, well, if he's 4 hours on the toilet, he never stays longer than 5 minutes. You got to have 5 times 12 is 4 hours. Okay. And he spends 4 hours a day. That means that he has to be on the toilet 3 times. And if you figure that 8 hours a day you spend sleeping, 16 hours, you put the 16 down to 2, 4, 3, and then you put the thing in. Yeah, so that'd be 3 times an hour he's sitting on the toilet using it. Now, Bud, I have to ask you, and I want you to be honest with me. Are you actually using the toilet?
Yeah.
In other words, what the doctor's asking is, are you actually performing the function for which it's intended, or you're not just sitting there?
Right. I mean, there's a lot of time that we spent sitting on a toilet.
Well, I mean, you mean the actual time that it...
It doesn't have to be the actual time that it takes you, but while you're sitting there, are you... Is it, you know...
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is. I mean, I could take a film of it if you want me to.
No. You don't have to take a film of it.
Because I figured it out. What you do is you get up and squeeze the... Right when you pinch it, and then...
Hold on, Bud. We don't need a film of it, okay?
No, I don't want to see that, Bud. I don't want to see that. I never want to see that, all right, Bud? You understand me? This is Dr. Tartar now.
Yes, sir.
I never, ever want to see that. And I sure as hell don't want to see it posted on... You don't do the YouTube, do you?
Yeah, well, yeah, everybody does YouTube. I do YouTube quite a bit.
Okay. Whatever you do on YouTube, I don't ever want to see that. I don't ever want to see... Here's Bud Dickman pitching one...
All right, let's not talk about it.
Do you mind? I'm having a little bit of late supper.
What are you eating?
If you must know, it's some peach cobbler.
Oh, that sounds delicious, Margaret. And I wouldn't want you thinking about Bud pinching one off.
God! Why did you do that?
I don't know. Because I saw Hawking here tonight, I know how you feel about him.
I think he's brilliant, and so you wanted me to destroy my dessert because you don't like the idea that I find Stephen Hawking devastating.
Yeah, no, that's the part that I don't get. That's the part I don't get.
We're not going to talk about Stephen Hawking tonight. We're not going to do it. We're not going to get sidetracked. I'll hang up before we do that. All I wanted to do was have you comment on the math.
On the math about this guy taking a dump, but Margaret Gray gets to pine after Stephen Hawking, and I got to sit here and bite on that towel. Thank you very much.
No one said that you had to comment on it.
No, but I have to, because there you are.
Well, but first of all, Ted, not Ted.
My name is Dr. Rod Tartar. God.
Dr. Tartar, I'm sorry. First of all, I had you on to talk specifically about this math that we want to do. Margaret's having a peach cobbler. I apologize that we got you involved with talking to her, but you brought up Hawking. You said he was there.
Yeah, I said he was there. I didn't know Margaret was sitting there. Going to get upset with the fact that someone's talking about how long it takes to be on a toilet. How did I know she was eating her dinner? It's a radio show, okay? It's not a diner. So in any event, Bud, I would say that you spend 16, I would say three times an hour. Is that right?
No.
What do you mean, no?
What do you mean, no?
I don't go three times an hour.
Okay, Bud, you know what? Get out of here, man. Just take whatever that is. What are you eating?
Some of the peach cobbler that Margaret brought.
Well, figuratively get out of there. You could stay there, but Phil just wants you out of his mind.
I can't get out of his mind unless Mr. Henry puts me out of his mind.
All right, never mind. Thank you very much, Ron.
Well, thanks a lot, Phil, for nothing, because now I got Margaret. Never mind. Goodbye.
Boy, what a big child he is. He knows that I think Stephen Hawking is fascinating. If he's got some idea that him and me... No.
Oh, I wasn't thinking that at all.
El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
It was during the pre-show, and welcome back here, ladies and gentlemen, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock. This is Saturday, so we always have to, you know, I always like to point out it's Saturday, because I love it.
And you're going to stay up all night again tonight, aren't you? And you're going to have another miserable weekend.
Maybe I will stay up all night tonight, you know? Maybe I will. I mean, I got no work I got to do tomorrow other than the work that I'm going to be doing, which, okay, now...
Yeah, tell Mr. Bell you got to do work.
I am doing work. I'm doing some writing. This weekend, I'm doing nothing but writing. I'm doing a lot of writing this weekend. So I can't make it to no softball game, no how, okay?
Well, all right, Mr. Eloquence.
Anyway, as I was saying, during the pre-show tonight on Phil TV... I got a hold of a film clip, and I initially got a hold of this clip watching a website called The Rialto Report. Now, The Rialto Report is a fascinating website. I'm a big history fan, and what do I mean by that? I like history, especially the history that hasn't been told, and there's a lot of it. You know, that's why I like the history of black people in the military,
the history of the 761 and units like that that were African American units, because I wasn't told that history as a kid. Nobody, you know, they didn't make any movies out of it. It wasn't in the textbooks. That's why I like The Gay Metropolis, which is a book that I read about the history of gay people in the United States. Just exactly, you know, what did gay people do in the 19th century, in the 18th century? Where did they meet? When did these gay communities come together in different cities? And what, spurred the movement and so on? To me, it's interesting history, and we shouldn't be afraid of it, because history is something, especially as Americans, because we believe in truth, we ought to embrace it. We shouldn't be afraid of the history. And the history of the beatniks, you know, what was that all about? Drug use, what's that all about? And these are things that you don't find in textbooks. So anyway, I was looking up the history of the nascent porn industry, if you will. And by that I mean sexploitation movies on into the hardcore stuff of the 80s. And I got interested in this when we were showing this movie on Phil TV one weekend called Diary of a Nudist. Now this Diary of a Nudist, which some people may think was just a record of a nudist colony, it was a way of our society to look at sexual movies and have it be legal. They would not allow you to make any movie containing nudity unless it was about a nudist camp or was some kind of a documentary. So they got around it by saying, well, here's a documentary, a Diary of a Nudist, you know. And of course it wasn't. There wasn't anybody in this film. I mean, everybody was like perfect looking. All the women were gorgeous. And the guys were whatever they were, and,
Yeah, that one lady, man, she had a pear on her...
Will you knock it off?
I don't want to hear about a pear on anybody, okay? Can I just make that statement?
Yes.
Hold on. You, Robert, and you, I don't want to hear about anybody having a pear on them. Do you understand?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And you too, Phil.
I didn't say anything, and I don't tell me what to say.
I don't want to know about your pair or her pair, anyone's pair.
What about your pair?
You dirty...
Hey! So anyway, I'm looking up this film, Diary of a Nudist, and I'm looking up the actors and the actresses, and I finally find this website called the Rialto Report, which has a whole thing about Times Square, a whole thing about the very early people that were performing in the early sexploitation movies of the 60s, which they didn't call it sexploitation then. They didn't call it softcore porn. They called it nudies. That's what they called them.
The what?
Nudies, man, because there were nude chicks in them. So anyway, I found this one actress I was curious about, and they linked something on YouTube. And it was a dance scene. It was not a dance scene featuring nudity. It was a nightclub dance scene. And I'm looking at these people dancing from like 1966, and I don't know what, I swear to God, if you didn't know what you were looking at, and there was a doctor watching it, you would say, doctor, what affliction is this? You know, multiple sclerosis, because the dancing...
Phil, I don't like that. I danced like that. The frug, the watusi.
What do you mean a watusi?
That's what they call the dance.
The frug and the watusi. I don't care what you call it. These people look like they have some kind of neural problem.
They're doing the Watusi.
But what do you mean a Watusi? Isn't that an African tribe?
Yes, it's a... Robert, please, I'm a liberal, and I say that. I know Phil doesn't like me saying that. I would never say anything racial. But the Watusi was an homage. I think it was a black group that actually came out with it.
Well, whatever, man. I don't want to go into a whole history of...
You said you want to know the history of the Watusi.
I didn't say I wanted to know the history of the Watusi. I said I was interested in looking up the history, you know...
Of porn.
Of, not porn, but what was the history of these nudie movies? And I got into the history of porn, but I got into this dance... This has got nothing to do with porn. These are people that are... look at this guy here. There's a guy in this dance step. You'd swear this guy's being electrocuted. That's what it looks like to me.
Well, I think that that's very offensive. He doesn't look like he's being electrocuted. It looks like the Watusi. Do you know what that is?
Yes, I know it's a dance.
Yes, it's also a tribe. So it was an homage to the tribe.
What?
The Watusi.
The dance they do on a Watusi?
Would you get off this kick, okay?
Phil.
No, Phil. No, Phil. The Watusi was an homage to the tribe. It was a stupid freaking nightclub dance. Get out of here. And the rest of these people look like they've got some problem. They look like they're being electrocuted. They look like they have multiple sclerosis. A couple of them look like they may have some sort of a spastic colon. A couple of them...
colon?
Yes. They look jacked up. All right, 877-876-PHIL. So I had this clip playing, and I thought people might be interested to look further into it as we do try to elucidate you here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Now, a couple of things that I want to say of note. One of them, tomorrow night on Phil TV in HD, we're going to be showing two films, not one, but two. One, The Bloody Pit of Horror, and the other, of course, DOA, starring Edmund O'Brien. Now,
excuse me, what do you mean, The Bloody Pit of Horror?
Do I got to explain everything to you? Get David Hall on the line, okay?
Oh, so now you're asking for the boss man. I can't wait for this.
I didn't say boss man.
Just never mind.
Yeah, I am. I want to get David Hall on the line, please. Right now, bud.
Oh, sorry.
Because I want to get this cleared up once and for all. You don't have any say in the movies that are shown.
David. David. Hey, David. What are you doing there? It's David. He's at a construction site. They're putting on a wing out of a house.
What I'm going to be doing. Hello?
Yeah, David, it's Phil.
Yeah, but right now we're in the final. We're just putting up a wall here. I got the guys working late. You know, I put a wing on the house.
You put a what?
I put a wing on the house.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I've got another wing next week, and then I'm going to fly my house to Las Vegas. Oh, God! No, we're just adding, what I'm trying to do is we're adding on an extension here, and these guys are out working late. So what can I do for you?
You got construction workers at your house at whatever it is, midnight?
Yes, I do. Construction workers at my house at midnight. What can I do for you?
Well, David, tomorrow night on Phil TV, we've got two movies, Bucket of the Pit of Horror.
What was it called?
It's called The Bloody Pit of Horror.
The Bloody Pit of Horror, okay.
And DOA.
Oh, man, Phil.
See, David, this is what I said. It's nothing but death. It's death, death, death.
You do a comedy show, or don't you?
Yes.
Why don't you show some laughs? Why don't you put on the gentleman, Jonathan Winters?
Yeah, Jonathan Winters. You don't know his name?
Yes, I know his name, but I've been in the middle of trying to get this retaining wall up. I got to get a drainage culvert. There's a lot of things I got to do before they sign off on this. I got the city coming in tomorrow. That's why I got these guys working late. But the whole thing I'm trying to tell you is, why don't you show something on Phil TV that isn't quite so ghoulish? Bucket of Pit of Horror? What is it?
It's called The Bloody Pit of Horror. It's a sign. It is funny. What are you talking about?
What's funny about that?
The whole movie is ridiculous. Did you see it?
No, I have not seen it.
Margaret, did you see it?
I did watch it, and I don't know what you're talking about. It is ghoulish.
The whole thing starts off with a guy wearing tights and a mask. He looks like a professional wrestler. Then they put him into a box that's supposed to be some, you know, 14th century coffin. It looks like it was made at a high school set class. And then he's supposed to be stabbed with these knives, and it's like five cardboard knives. The whole thing is cornball.
This is called the bucket of the pit of the... What is it again?
It's called Bloody Pit of Horror.
And where was it made?
Why does that matter?
If it was made in Italy, I mean, you know, you've got something... Those people know how to make... If it was made here, then I'll go ahead and I'll say to you, I'll give it my stamp of approval, and I'll back you up to the advertisers that it's got to be crap. But if it was made in Italy, those Italians, I'm telling you, they make horror movies that will absolutely scare you to death.
I think it was shot in Italy with an American crew.
Oh, no. No, 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 no.
I told you, Phil.
No, no, no.
What's wrong?
No. Hold on, hey, baby. Baby, go get that flask. I've got the car. No, you can't be serious.
What are you talking about?
You're showing an Italian horror movie on Phil TV, right? When I've got advertisers checking in to see how kitschy and stupid those movies are, and you've got an Italian horror movie? Those things will scare people to death. Those Italians know how to make horror movies. What's the guy's name that you're always talking about?
The guy's name?
Yeah, the guy you're always talking about, the Italian.
The Italian that I'm always talking about?
The guy that makes the movies!
Argento, Argento.
That's it, Argento. And the other one?
Bava.
Bava. Argento and Bava. Those two guys make horror movies so realistic that people will die from fright. And tomorrow night, I've got the guys from Flemley's, the muffler place, and I've got that lady who will be calling, who'll be watching Phil TV tomorrow night. She's the one who has the spastic colon pills I was talking about. They want to sponsor your podcasts, and they're going to tune in, and they're going to watch the buddy, the blah, oh.
David, can we calm down here for a minute? Because I want to say a couple of things.
Is this going to be a speech?
He's been giving speeches all night, David.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Maybe it is going to be a speech. Can I just say something?
Go ahead.
First of all, I know about Bavo and Argento. They're great filmmakers. This is a piece of garbage. It was shot in Italy. I think it's shot in Italy. It has an Italian crew. It's all American actors, and it was American produced. It's ridiculous beyond all. It's the stupidest thing you ever saw in your life.
And you're saying Italians made it?
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, it'll probably scare. You said there was a guy in tights and a hood?
Yes.
Well, what's that mean?
The guy in the tights and the hood?
Yeah, what's that?
That's the guy. The movie opens in the 14th century. The guy's called the Crimson Executioner.
Is he a wrestler?
No, he's not a wrestler. He's a guy that's... The movie is about the ghost of this guy coming back and butchering people up.
Oh, great. He's wearing tights and a hood. So right there, you've got a gay overtone, the Crimson Executioner, you got some wrestling going on. I got people watching the show tomorrow night to sponsor your podcasts. Now, I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to hit this as lightly as I can, Phil. You got to do something else. If you got some horror movie that is going to take people into another kind of consciousness of fear, and on top of that, it's gay and wrestling, I can't have it. I can't do it. Do anything you can. Show anything you can. I don't want the bucket of the pit of the blood, whatever the hell.
It's, David, it's called Bloody Pit of Horror. That ought to scare you enough.
Bloody Pit of Horror. Don't you have to break? It says 18 minutes after the hour. Back when I was a disc jockey.
All right, hold on for me. Yes, we do have to break. Sorry. We'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're still showing Bloody Pit of Horror tomorrow night. So how does that make you feel, Margaret Gray?
You know something? I hope the FCC gets a hold of the... Well, they won't do anything anyway, will they?
No.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
I can't breathe.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And just checking into some news that possibly lawyer girl saw details of online sex assault.
You're kidding.
No. 15-year-old Andre Pott passed out drunk at a friend's home, woke up and concluded that she had been abused sexually. In the days that followed, she was shocked to see an explicit photo of herself circulating among her classmates, along with emails and text messages about the episode. And then horrified to discover that her attackers were three of her friends. Good God! 8 days after the party, this child, she hanged herself. She pieced together with emails and texts who had done this to her. They were her friends. Her friends, said her attorney, Robert Allard. On Thursday, they arrested three 16-year-old boys on suspicion of sexual... See, all three of these guys that did this, these kids... You might as well throw their ass in the can, because any 16-year-old kid that is involved in something that vicious and violent, there's something already, unless the kid comes from a seriously abusive background. I can bet you money a 16-year-old boy that rapes is either already genetically predisposed to being a psychopath. That's number one. Number two, that kind of behavior is occurring in his own home. That he's either witnessed or he's been the victim of it. Okay. Or number three, the kid has just gone crazy with anger because of just one-sided abuse by one or other of the parents or some other older person. So either he's witnessed it taking place against family members and this is the norm, or he's just been beaten so bad that he's turned into a hostile individual himself and abuse. And, you know, or no, the other one, that he's just like he was born a psycho. That's what you got to figure out, you know. The arrests and the details that came spilling out shocked many in this prosperous Silicon Valley suburb of 30,000. And together with two other episodes recently in the news, a suicide in Canada, a rape in Steubenville, Ohio, the case underscores the seeming callousness with which some young people use technology. Not only that, but stupid? Oh, my God, are they stupid. Let me ask you a question. Maybe it's a good thing that they want to get caught, that they put a lot of this stuff online and they turn it into texts and they turn it into pictures and they're basically saying, hi, we just committed a crime. Look at us. Maybe they already know this. Maybe they, well, you know. Or maybe they're just so dumb, it begs belief. But you sure as hell, you aren't making it tough for the cops at all. But that's about as callous as it gets. I don't get it. The only thing that I can say is, like I say, it's a psychopath thing. This poor kid sees this stuff, puts it together, and then kills herself. Nice going. Then they finally arrested these three scumbags. Now, let me read this. Authorities arrested three 16-year-old boys Thursday on charges that they sexually attacked a 15-year-old. A family attorney said Audrey Pott was humiliated by online photos. That's real, you know. Maybe they know they're going to get caught, but it's worth it. The family had been trying to understand why their loving daughter would have taken her life at such a young age and to make sure that those responsible would be held accountable. After an extensive investigation we've conducted on behalf of the family, there's no doubt in our mind that the victim, then only 15 years of age, was savagely assaulted by fellow high school students. The other thing is they ought to start announcing their names. I don't give a crap, you know. Just start telling their names, you know. I don't give a... better to me if they're underage. Saratoga High School principal Paul Robinson announced her death's stunning classmates. 2 days later, other students and staff wore this girl's favorite color, teal. Man. And she saw all this crap online. I'll tell you. The internet is a marvelous invention for a lot of reasons, but I never anticipated that it would be the ultimate dumbass filter. I swear to God, did you ever think of it that way? I mean, I knew that when I began sending out emails and just using the internet for a variety of... I mean, the first computer I ever got was in 97. I mean, the first computer I got where I was online, and it was about 1997. And... you know, of course, I used it to, like a real dork, I used it to look up things, and it never occurred to me, you know.
Do you ever look up porn?
Well, sure I looked up porn. Who doesn't?
I don't.
You expect me to believe that?
Yes, I do expect you to believe that. I didn't say Frank didn't, I said I don't.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Anyway... but the fact of the matter is, I never in my wildest dreams imagined that the internet would be one other thing. A great resource, yes. Great informational resource, yes. A disseminator of bullcrap, of course. Do you have to be smart? Is the internet a place where the smart can be, you can put your brains on display every bit as much as you can show people just how stupid you are? Yes. Oh, yeah, because what you believe... pretty much tells the story of who and what you are. And the internet is a great place to go, and you're sort of wandering through this wilderness of facts and non-facts and bullcrap and half-crap and real stuff and fake stuff, and you are, everybody wants to give their opinion. People cannot resist giving their opinion. All you got to do is take a look at the comments comment section on YouTube, and, man, it can sure as hell show you, it can show the whole world just how stupid you are. But I never thought in my wildest dreams that people would actually be advertising the crimes they're committing. Why?
Be popular.
Be popular with who? Other dumbasses? I'm the president of the Dumbass Club. All right, we'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with other news. More news on the Phil TV in HD and the movies we're going to be showing tomorrow night, and our one-man show and other things we'll be offering up. Coming up, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Stick around.
The
Phil
dumbass.
Hendry.
I resent that.
Famous Phil Hendry Show. Bobby Dooley is going to join us here briefly on the on our newsmaker line to talk with us about the podcast she's got that just came out Friday, I'd say today, on Friday. And Bobby and Steve are with us from Western Estates. Bobby, how are you?
Phil, I'm doing good. Thank you.
And the Bobby Dooley podcast, a new episode, two-parter with Chris D'Elia. Tell us about it.
It was a lot of fun, Phil. Chris D'Elia is a very interesting young man. He's originally from New Jersey. He grew up in Southern California and is very funny, very handsome young man. And we spoke an awful lot about his career. Steve got into it a little bit with Chris. And Steve, if you want to speak to that.
Well, I don't want to do it. I mean, I'm...
Well, my understanding was Steve, well...
Steve, he had his hand shoved in his pockets. And what attracted Chris's attention is that even when Steve came back into the studio, he didn't take his hands out of his pockets. He pushed the door open with his shoulder and then actually delivered some coffee with the coffee balancing on his shoulder.
Well, yeah, because I, you know...
Yeah, because your hands were busy in your pockets. That's when I made the comment. Basically, I said, joy-holing are we? And then Chris took it from there.
I didn't think it was fair.
So my understanding is you're telling me that Steve had his hands deep in his pockets, joy-holing.
Yeah, well...
That's what I think, and that's what Chris concluded. But that's at the tail end of the episode. I think you have to listen and enjoy. There's quite a bit that happens. Chris D'Elia, he's a marvelous, marvelous, funny guy, and we're excited to have him.
So that dropped on Friday. Part two will be a week from Friday. And I know that you were planning on recording Friday as well, correct?
We were planning on having Jane Wells, but Jane got busy. I think she got called away to a story. She's a wonderful girl, and she said, Bobby, I know that in so many ways you're, and she was very honest. She said to me on the phone, I know in so many ways you're, you know, a little bit superior to me. And I said, oh, Jane, stop it. Everyone loves you. And she said, everyone loves me, she said, but you are your own woman, and I've often admired you. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, I love your sense of style. I love the fact that you don't have to work like I do. I love how you've been able to maintain your skin tone, as I haven't.
All right, let's stop for just a second, okay?
I'm just being very honest, Phil.
No, stop. That's not fair. I don't think that's fair at all. To come on and say, well, we couldn't have Jane Wells on, but you know what happened, Phil? Let me just tell you, this, that, this, and that.
Well, granted, that's what you were saying about skin tone and everything.
What do you mean? I think Jane Wells is a gorgeous woman.
She's cute, yeah, she's cute.
So in any event, what happened? You got to reschedule?
Why are you rushing through this? I wanted to tell you she's cute, and she has a very nice figure, but I think if you put us side by side is all I'm saying.
That's nice. That's nice. So,
That's nice.
Are you saying good night?
I said that's nice.
No, you didn't. You said that night. You went that day.
Okay, so in any event, did you reschedule?
No, we did not reschedule in any event. No, we did not, because Jane was busy. She's out doing what she has to do, and I was doing what I do. And she did what she did. I did what I had to do, right, Steve?
Yeah, you did what you did.
No, I did what I do, and she did...
All right, Bobby, so you will reschedule Jane Wells, and what's up after Chris D'Elia?
After Chris D'Elia, we're hopeful that we'll have, as you mentioned, Phil, one of the iconic comic actors on television, just a tremendous man, John Ratzenberger. And he has a very long history of comic acting in England, as well as here in the United States. He's originally from Wisconsin. But he's got a great resume, a long, long history of acting in both serious as well as comic roles, as well as a lot of really goofy things. He was in Motel Hell, I think, wasn't he, Steve?
And then the one where his head was sticking up.
Yeah, do you remember...
Motel Hell.
Yeah, do you remember a exploitation kind of horror movie? Where the heads were sticking up out of the ground like they were growing people.
Seems to me I remember something like that.
Yeah, it was one of his head was one of the heads.
Yeah, John Ratzenberger's head was one of the heads.
Okay. I mean, what was the name of it?
I think it was called Motel Hell or the Hell of a Motel. It's one hell of a motel. I don't know what was the...
Yeah, the Hell Motel is the hell. Hell in the motel.
Well, every motel is sort of hell, so I don't know what...
I think it's called Motel Hell. We can look it up. So John was in that?
Yeah, he was. And you call him John? That's interesting, because I would not presume.
I'm sorry, Mr. Ratzenberger was in that?
Yes, Mr. Ratzenberger. Well, I can call him John because I've met him. But I just wondered where you presume to call him John.
Forgive me. Mr. Ratzenberger, he was in the hell of a motel. Not...
not the hell of a motel. It's called a one. It would be called one hell of a motel.
Yeah.
It's called Motel Hell. Is that right?
Yes, Phil. It's called Motel. Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to move our little interview along here. So, congratulations on the podcast. Any comment on Jonathan Winters dying?
Only what you have said, Phil, and what everyone has said. He was a wonderful, wonderful comic. He was a great actor. He was a great actor and a great comic. And I'm sure he was a great father.
I'm sure he was.
And he was a grandfather.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
Jonathan Winters?
Yes, Steve. He was a grandfather.
He had five grandchildren. He had two kids and five grandchildren.
Oh! I was thinking about Jim Morrison. You were talking about him.
Jim Morrison.
Yeah, you were talking about Jim Morrison.
Yeah, I know I was talking about Jim Morrison. I wasn't talking about Jonathan Winters.
Well, how many grandchildren does he have any?
No, Jim Morrison has no grandchildren. He died when he was 27. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, Bobby, and we're looking forward to listening to this new episode of the Bobby Dooley Podcast. Chris D'Elia, where can we find it?
The Bobby Dooley Podcast, Phil, is on iTunes. You can also find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on the Sideshow Network, and you can also access us by way of BillHendryRadio.com, and that's always very exciting.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bobby.
Thank you.
Bobby Dooley there, and excuse me. What, Margaret?
Well, did you hear it?
Did I hear what?
She goes, that's always exciting. Oh, my God. Every day that I'm alive, it's one more day that I'm glad to be alive. I'll tell you that.
She said exciting, huh?
Yeah, she did. Oh, it's really exciting.
Hold on.
Take a drink of the Coca-Cola. What?
You were making fun of her saying exciting. Hold on. I got a tickle in my throat. You were just making fun of her saying exciting, and did you notice what you did?
No, I didn't notice what I did. What are you talking about?
You were just making fun of Bobby saying exciting.
Yes, I know that.
And you said, take a drink of Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Well, Bud, I don't expect you to know how to pronounce it, but you don't know how to pronounce Coca-Cola?
Phil, you can go either way. Do you know where Coca-Cola's from or Coca-Cola's from?
Atlanta.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Henry. Thank you.
Hey, Bud, shut up.
But talk about Coca-Cola.
Yes, it's pronounced Coca-Cola.
No, it is not pronounced Coca-Cola. It's pronounced Coca-Cola. Okay? Why do you think it's called Coke?
I don't know. That's the way they spell it. God.
Hold on. God.
If you're trying to get sympathy with that, there's a tickle in my throat. I've heard that act before.
I'm not trying to get sympathy. I actually do have a little bit of a tickle in my throat. I don't know what it's from. It's called Coke because it's Coca-Cola.
It's called Coke because Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola. C-O-Coke-Ola. See, Phil? Coca-Cola.
All right, I'm going to show you something.
What do you want to say?
How is that spelled?
C-O-C-A-C-O-L-A.
All right, pronounce it.
Coca-Cola. Will you knock it off with the coughing?
All right, never mind. I got to take another sip of this Coca-Cola, and we'll go into a break here just as soon as I've taken my sip and reminded you that we're online at philhenryshow.com. philhenryshow.com with a backstage pass. You can access all of our archives We've got thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of archived audio at philhenryshow.com. We also have our current show there. We also have our current videocast there. You can watch our videocast on demand. You don't have to be watching us live, you know, but we do provide a live stream of our videocast for you. And it is accessed on all kinds of devices. You can watch us on the iPad, the iPhone, your Android, whatever. Check us out at philhenryshow.com. I really do have a, I don't know, man.
You losing your voice or something?
Does it sound like I'm losing my voice?
It does a little bit, yeah.
All right. I think it's an allergy. And there was somebody at, yesterday I was at this meeting at a hotel, and one of the people there said they were suffering from an allergy. All right, we'll be right back. The world famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. Oh, the Phil God. Hendry Show.
I hate you.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, God love you. What's that reason? I feel like a fool in these coveralls. Arnold Stebler drove me around in a semi-truck for the past 15 hours, and he said we were supposed to meet down at the barn, and there's a surprise for you there. I just want to tell you this. The guys feel different about you. If you was to come home now, they'd just beat the life out of you. So don't come back to Norfolk right away. I remember, you know, I guess you do too. At the high school, you know, Johnny was, he started out, he was in all kinds of things. He was in everything. One thing he wanted to be more than anything, he used to tell me, I was one of his best buddies at the time, and him and me would go out into an open field, and we'd just look up and talk to one another and everything, and he says, you know what, I'd rather be more than anything in the world is a magician. And so he started magic, and he gave himself a name, the Great Carsoni, and he thought on that real hard. And he'd take a little, we didn't have no bunnies, and so he took a squirrel and dyed it white. And pulled it out, you know, and the people go, that's a white squirrel. the fact that you've been able to make two wives disappear Listen, you take care of yourself. It's wonderful to see you.
Anyway, that's Jonathan Winters. It was on a roast of Johnny Carson, and he came out in character. And the people that were sitting there at that table as he was roasting Carson, it was like Jack Benny and Red Fox and some heavy hitters. Anyway, I thought I'd play a little bit of that. I wish I had I had a bunch of outtakes of Jonathan Winters. And I forget where I got a hold of this tape. I think I got a hold of it from one of the engineers at Westwood One years ago, but this was prior to the internet. So everything I had was on tape, you know, and now everything that I had on tape that I would collect in these boxes and protect with my life and kill anyone that came within 10 feet of it, now it's all, you know, you can find most of it on the internet, I'm pretty sure. Like, for instance, I had this tape of Jack Kerouac and Zoot Sims. Zoot Sims is playing a saxophone, Jack Kerouac's reading from one of his books. Now, I think, you know, you can get the, you can buy the actual tape from Amazon, but Nonetheless, and then that Tommy Lasorda tape where Tommy Lasorda is going out to pull Doug Routh in the 1978 World Series and he starts cursing up a storm. That was like a really rare thing. I had this for years. Now, it's like I say, it's probably online. But this thing I had at Jonathan Winters, he's in a recording session, and I don't know what it was for. It might have been for a cigarette. It might have been for some advertiser. Well, he never did get around to cutting the commercial, at least not what I heard, because the guys, the tape that he was doing, it's just a bunch of outtakes of him cracking up the engineers. He's talking, he's going into all kinds of voices, and he's doing all kinds of sketches. He's talking about Abraham Lincoln. He was talking about Sammy Davis Jr. He goes into some bit about sitting on the toilet smoking Lucky Strike cigarettes, and just I'm telling you, funny. You can imagine Jonathan Winters without having to watch what he's saying. I mean, he wasn't being edited by anybody or anything. It was just a bunch of outtakes that some engineer was smart enough to save and disseminated throughout the engineering world. It finally made its way to Phil Hendry. And I guess now, like I said, it's got to be online someplace. I'll bet you anything now you can find it because Jonathan Winters has passed on. And anybody holding on to this stuff, I don't know where it is now. I had it, and it's gone now. But anybody that's hanging on to this stuff, man, they must be uploading a lot of stuff to the internet. I don't know. It's kind of interesting to me tonight. When I was looking for some stuff, I couldn't find it. I thought, well, for sure that would be like the first thing that would be in the, the first thing that you would see. Let me look at some other news here. Did I already tell you about this Kim Jong, his old man? Yeah, the military. We got that story out of the way. We got Matt Damon's $20 million. Oh, I want to mention to you, tomorrow night we're going to, as I did mention, and then Margaret interrupted me.
What?
I was saying that tomorrow night, and please don't interrupt me this time with a call to David Hall, we're going to have Bloody Pit of Horror and DOA.
Even after he said don't do it.
He doesn't even know what he's talking about. He's listening. I can hear construction equipment going on. So it's DOA, Bloody Pit of Horror, tomorrow night on Phil TV in HD. Check it out. Starts at 8 p.m.
You belched.
Hey, let's have an agreement here, okay?
Well, you did.
Let's have an agreement. Everybody that belches, we won't point it out. And also, we won't belch so that you can hear it on the microphone. Can everybody abide by that? Just an agreement, a friendly agreement?
I don't know if I can, Phil.
So you are going to continue to stick your mouth right up to that microphone and let it rip.
I don't want to risk tearing my esophagus.
By holding a belch in?
No, by holding it in.
Yeah, that could be serious injury, Mr. Henry.
Oh, what do you know about it? Excuse me.
Well, it sounds like you tore your esophagus right there.
What happened, Phil?
I don't know. It's this allergy, I'm telling you.
See, did you want to keep that in and tear your esophagus?
Keep in what? It's an allergy I've got. Anyway.
See, you're coughing on mic. So I think you need to be a little bit more forgiving.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, so point being, as I was saying, we are going to have tomorrow night two features on Phil TV in HD. Check it out. Okay, that having been said, great. The one-man show, our one-man show performance, as well as auditions continue. We'll let you know. We're coming down to the wire on that. We'll let you know when we are ready to actually put that on stage so that you can come out and see us. Our Truth Is Our Bitch tour. It ought to be a beautiful thing. I've been mentioning to you that we are planning a new podcast come summertime, and we are. It will be a daily show. We are going to be bringing back phone calls. Don't worry about how we're going to do it. We're going to do it. I think you'll love it. And obviously all of this in anticipation of the fall when we really amp up our one-man show because my understanding is that live performance season starts around October. So this summer will be really us kind of working the show out and working the act out and doing what we can and then really, you know, hitting with a big major blitz in October, if you'll pardon the use of the word blitz. Okay.
Well, what's wrong with that?
It's sort of a warmonger term.
Yeah, that's...
I know, that's real bad, ain't it? Yeah. Okay, so there's that, and let's see. Oh, yeah, tomorrow, Ted's of Beverly Hills. I'm not going to be playing in that game.
Well, he is really counting on you. I can tell he's very disappointed.
Well, then he shouldn't have counted on me to be in that game in the first place. Anyway, tomorrow, Ted's of Beverly Hills takes on Hong Kong Charlie's.
in the annual Ted's of Beverly Hills Softball Classic. We will certainly keep you abreast of that. I don't know, you know, whatever. So until we meet again, ladies and gentlemen, and that'll be Monday night at 10 on the West Coast, 1 a.m. Tuesday morning on the East Coast, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, let that be a lesson to you.